Support for the show comes from Atlassian. Having trouble getting things done at work? You're not alone. Maybe in order to unlock amazing outcomes, it's time to stop looking up and down for answers and instead start looking across. What do we mean by that? The companies with the fastest speed to market tend to be the ones that look across the organization rather than up and down the hierarchy. Stay tuned to hear how Atlassian software like Confluence, Jira, and Loom can help maximize effective teamwork in your organization. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
Support for this episode comes from The Current Report. From data privacy to the future of TV, retail media, and beyond, the world of digital marketing is constantly in flux. So how can you keep up? Well, The Current Report is there for you. Each week, marketing leaders on the cutting edge give you the latest insight. So if it's creating a buzz, they'll be talking about it. Subscribe to The Current Report wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. This is Pivot from New York Magazine and the Vox Media Podcast Network. I'm Kara Swisher.
And Kara, this is Preet Bharara. What's his name? Preet?
Bharara. Oh, my God.
He's joining Vox.
He is. What do you think about it? Bharara. What am I talking about? Why am I? Bharara. Preet Bharara.
What do I think, honestly? I think there are a few people who have fallen further faster, as evidenced by he's now on Vox. Let me get this.
No.
Manhattan DA.
Yeah.
To a podcaster to Vox.
Oh, come on.
I mean, something's gone wrong.
Why can't you look at it as we're building a powerhouse brand here? Huh? A powerhouse brand.
That's what's going on.
But,
that guy
Preet
is seriously classing up the joint.
He has heavy-duty brain. He's got a lot of brain matter going on.
But also, just you can listen to his voice. Mm-hmm. And I can now say this, that he's joined the illegitimate world of podcasting. Yeah. I think he would be a very gentle lover. I imagine him, that voice, after a bout of lovemaking, saying, honey, I'll make some Hot Pockets and break out the Lancer's wine.
I just think he'd
be a very gentle lover.
I'm not going to go into the history of some lawyers in New York, but there's quite a few that have issues.
That guy's got a brain the size of Vox.
Yes.
He's huge. I mean, he's seriously...
Yeah.
I don't know what we're paying him,
but
he basically classed up the joint.
That's a big deal for us.
Bancroft.
We're gonna be hanging with Preet quite a bit. He's coming on. I'm gonna bring him on next week, and you're gonna be your best behavior. You can be nice to him when he comes on and discusses.
No! I've already decided he and I are gonna be very close friends.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good.
He and I are gonna be very close.
Good.
Friends.
He's wonderful. He's really great, and he knows where all the bodies are buried. He's Mr. Legal Expert and all kinds of stuff. And he has many interests beyond just legal. I think he's really kind of enjoyed getting fired by Trump because
he made a career out of it.
Well, yes, but he also is a very good legal person. Anyway, all right. Listen.
Well, the Southern District. I mean, the Southern District. If you could SPAC that thing.
Yes, I know.
That's one of the best brands in the world.
Did they base the billions guy on him? They may have.
Oh, that's interesting. Because you know what my other opening was going to be?
No.
I'm Scott Galloway, and I just matched on Tinder with the Queen of England. Is it too early for her to date? Is it too soon?
Where did you come up with that? I got to be honest.
I got to be honest. Older women love me. Women my age and younger women want nothing to
can
do with the dog.
Can you imagine if she like fell in love with you? That's like a movie. Like she met you in
front of her. I can see it.
And then you could do an Oprah interview together.
I'll tell you one thing though, that Prince Philip guy, he's another hottie. That guy was hot.
All right, we're going to move on.
That guy was hot.
Okay.
Do you see that guy in a kilt?
I do.
That guy was a tall drink of lemonade.
Okay.
And he was a class act. Rest in peace.
Not every time. He had some missteps.
Look at his life as a movie. Don't focus in on the few frames that weren't great. That guy was a class act.
Quite a few of those frames. Anyway, it's fine. You know what? Rest in peace, Prince Philip.
Call me. Okay. Queen of England, call me.
Okay. Microsoft is acquiring speech recognition firm called
Good
Nuance.
Good segue.
I don't know how to segue from that statement, but nonetheless, they bought a $16 billion deal and like nobody's paying attention. Everyone's like focused on like whether Substack's good
what
for the world or
here?
Not. Healthcare, cloud products for healthcare.
Well, thanks for that thoughtful analysis of the situation.
Well, we're all getting into the big businesses of healthcare. It's speech
just
recognition.
Just say cloud and healthcare.
So people
we
would
can't
call
be wrong.
Nuance is a speech recognition. It's a long-time speech recognition company. So it's like I'm feeling sick or tone of voice or things like that. It's really going to be important. Telehealth is a big deal. Even though my brother gets all mad about it, telehealth is a big deal. And how it's not going to be doctors, it's going to be more computerized. It's 100% the way it's going to be.
So pre-pandemic,
yeah.
What percentage of visits were virtual?
Oh, do you have statistics?
I do.
Okay, then give them to me.
Well, guess what percent of doctor's visits were virtual pre-pandemic?
Huh, between, I have no fucking idea and I don't care. what?
Correct.
Okay, what is it?
0.8% of visits were virtual. Do you know what they were during the pandemic?
What?
30%.
Wow.
And so this is, I mean, again, largest, I always get hit hard. People say it's not a consumer industry, but I would argue the largest encapsulated industry in the world, U.S. healthcare, is we've never seen a channel shift like that. I don't think in any, I mean, okay, so theaters went from $5 billion a year to zero, but that's $5 billion. 30% of healthcare is arguably, you figure two-thirds of the $3 trillion are services that can be done outside of a doctor's office. So the potential market is $2 trillion. So you had what was effectively a $600 billion transition in channels. I mean, we've never seen anything like that.
I know. It's going to be a big deal. So this is everyone's got to get their tech going correctly, not just their following HIPAA laws, but how tech is going to work and how people are going to do this. And so there's going to be a couple players, Amazon, Microsoft, Google has tried and is not as aggressive in this area now, and Apple. Microsoft,
but
what'll
be interesting is
Amazon.
So Siri was this failed thing sitting on top of an iPhone. I wonder if they'll incorporate voice. I said a few years ago, I thought wearables, AR, 3D printing were all stupid virtual reality. But the technology I've always been bullish on that I thought was the most important technology of the next 10 years was voice.
Yeah.
And I wonder if they're going to incorporate this into Office. And they'll have niche, like Office for hospitals or Office for healthcare, and they'll incorporate it into, because that to me seems like, you know, Microsoft Offices are kind of their iPhone.
Yeah.
And I wonder if they're going to build around that.
Say that again. That was really smart.
Well, I'll say it in a deep Glaswegian voice. it was, I think Office is their, all these guys have kind of one thing that is their gangster move. Amazon, it's Prime, Apple's the iPhone. And I think obviously Microsoft Office is the strongest recurring revenue relationship in the history of business.
Right. All right. So Nuance calls itself conversational AI, just remember. So it's voice,
AI.
It's not just healthcare, but it's financial services too. But healthcare is where it's really done deeply. It's been building deep domain experience in that area. So it's clearly a move in that direction, is this idea of, giving more tools for its customers, 100%. Mm-hmm. It's a great, once again, Satya Nadella, very smart. He's a very canny man, I have to say.
And
Microsoft's been in speech systems for years. 100 years ago, there was another one, Dragon Systems. They had Cortana, if you remember, all kinds of things. So it's not an area they don't know about. But I think it's just tech applications in healthcare is going to be a big, big business, and especially artificial intelligence. Thank you. That is my speech.
Yeah, you really went out on a limb there.
I'm just saying. I think it's very profound what they're doing here. They're making smart. They're buying smart things. They're buying smart things that fit in nicely with their stuff. Now, Netflix, interesting, will be the first U.S. streaming home for Sony Pictures theatrical releases. This is now a big shift by these big studios. But meanwhile, Warner Brothers CEO Jason Miller says starting this next year, the company's biggest movies will debut in theaters. Before moving to the streaming service, I think they're going to move very fast to the streaming service, though. So it's sort of a little pap to the filmmakers for 4 seconds, but it's not going to be any 90-day kind of window.
Yeah, I was forced to watch. I had a bro night with my 10 and 13-year-old boys on Friday night. Yeah, and I said, what do you want to watch? And of course, it was Godzilla and King Kong.
I had to do that last weekend.
Oh, my God. It's like, it's literally... Why would they even make a different movie? It's the same goddamn movie the first time. It's the same plot
line.
Neil
Patel said it's the most intense movie about wireless charging he's ever seen.
It's just, it's like they say, okay, how do we spend $250 million such that we can justify people having to take their son? I literally don't get that movie making genre.
I liked it a lot better than I thought. That's what I'd say about it.
But we saw it. There is a class of movies, the kind of blockbuster, basically movies that appeal to 15-year-old boys that can stop, do a drive-by to this dying complex called the movie theater and pick up a half a billion to $1 billion. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me of the Office argument. The fastest way to process information is binary, either zero or ones. And we want to categorize everything as we're all going to go back to the office or none of us are. Yeah. And the reality is 98% of companies are going to be somewhere between. And what you're going to see in movies is that you will still have first run movies that stop by the movie theater for a 4 to 12 week window. But the world has shifted dramatically. Yeah. And you're going to see a lot more films. The power has ceded dramatically to the streamers. You're going to see a lot more films go straight to
I watched Thunder Force this weekend, which is Melissa McCarthy and Octavia Spencer, which was clearly for the it was a kind of a satiric, a superhero movie essentially, mm-hmm. of buddies. And I know it felt like one of those movies that Melissa McCarthy does that just goes out and moves around and does okay. And it was fine. It was exactly where I wanted to see it on my screen.
Well, yeah, that's the equivalent of straight to video for the digital age.
But it wasn't straight to video. It's a little better than that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they weren't. So I just think this is just inevitable. And this is just the move to the theaters is only for very big films, like the next Black Panther or whatever, mm-hmm. which you do want to see in that way. But most of these movies do much better, whether they go to Netflix, that Sony Pictures is doing. Everyone sees the writing on the wall of this is going.
I think that's right.
Anyway, Scott, you're on the cover of New York Magazine this week.
Hello.
Tell us more.
Well, finally, New York Magazine has decided to do their own Sexiest Man Alive 2021.
They did not.
It was a toss-up between me and George Clooney and Michael Jordan. No, I'm talking about, by the way, if I were the Sexiest Man Alive, would I be like Johnny Depp or Brad Pitt or George Clooney and go on to win it twice and be worth hundreds of millions of dollars? Oh, you know who I'd be the Sexiest Man Alive with people? Who? Nick Nolte. Like, somewhat talented, but probably should have never been on the cover and has some serious fucking demons to deal with. I am the Nick Nolte of New York Magazine.
Okay.
Anyway.
What's the thing about? We got to get to big stories. What is the thing?
I'm sorry.
What is the piece?
I haven't eaten. I'm like literally hallucinating right now.
I see that you did CrossFit and haven't eaten, but I had a lovely lunch, a very healthy lunch.
I'm fascinated by the idea of volatility. Yep. And that volatility's embrace is directly correlated to how shitty your life is. And essentially, I think America is breaking down because for the first time in our nation's history over an extended period of time, a 30-year-old's life is shittier than his or her parents was at 30. And I think that is the root or the incendiary underneath the Me Too movement, Black Lives Matter, the GameStop movement, these mass shootings. I think it makes everything worse.
Volatility.
And what happens if you're in a supermax prison, life sentence, you want volatility. You would opt for a nuclear strike on your city if you're sitting in isolation in supermax. And when your expectations and your desires and your hopes for a better future go down, you want volatility. And so we're embracing cryptocurrencies. We're embracing mob squeezes in the stock market. We're embracing, to a lesser extent, but we're embracing conspiracy theories because volatility, all we have done the last 20 years is the shareholder class that speaks to their senator on average once a month and that controls and has weaponized the government. All they have done is effectively tried to suppress volatility. So in 2008, there was almost a financial crisis. So we spent $700 billion to make sure that we didn't go into depression. But baby boomers have now decided they not only won't tolerate a depression, they won't tolerate a recession. Mm-hmm. So we have issued $6 trillion in stimulus to make sure that there's this champagne and cocaine party keeps going, even if the hangover is going to get much, much fucking worse. And so we have this massive suppression of volatility. And unless you let the gale forces of creative disruption blow, young people never get a shot. So what we want to do is keep existing businesses in business owned by baby boomers such that young people can't come in and re-lease that restaurant for 50 cents on the dollar.
Right, which we talk about here. This is something. So you brought together in this piece, it's called The Unified Monetary Theory of Beeple and Biden. And it's got all kinds of good art, Scott. I just got to tell you. It's a very sexy looking story.
Yeah, it's already getting some heat, which I'm excited about.
Good.
And even one of my colleagues at NYU said it wasn't awful. That's what he wrote. This isn't awful for you. He wrote for you.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
But yeah, I think there's something here. I think that if we're not careful, whether it's your ability, it all comes down to this one thing: the general compact in our society has to be that our 30-year-olds do as well as we did at 30. And yep. if that's not working, full stop, you know, don't pass go. How do we have more protection of people on low cluster wages and minimum wage? How do we have vocational on-ramps for the two-thirds of young people that don't get a college degree? How do we transfer wealth back to renters from homeowners and get rid of this ridiculous mortgage interest rate cap tax deduction? How do we help people who are make money through their salary, i.e. younger people, by not charging lower taxes on current income versus investment income? We need a serious retransfer. And it's no longer about doing the right thing. It's about self-preservation. Because at some point, when the bottom 40% of America and young people see that two men are worth more than they are, they will figure out a way to take their wealth away. That is the basis of economic history. At some point, when the bottom half figures out the fastest way to double our wealth is through volatility, whether it's violence,
trouble,
under the auspices of another worthwhile movement, whatever it might be, under the auspices of going on Reddit, the hostility, the justified hostility, is created a desire for volatility because our government won't let the markets be volatile on their own.
All right. Okay. All right. Everybody read it. Scott on volatility. What a shock. Anyway, it's an excellent article, actually.
The Queen of England and I are
dating. It's not as bad as it could have been. It's, what does he say?
It was less. They're like, my professor said, like, I never hear from this guy. And he's kind of my rock star idol. And he's like, this wasn't awful for you.
This was not awful for you.
This was not awful for you.
All right, big stories. We're going to big stories. Amazon workers in Alabama warehouse have voted against unionizing. This was one of the biggest efforts in organized labor movement in Amazon's history. Workers cast nearly 1,800 votes against a union, giving Amazon enough to defeat the effort. Ballots in favor of the union were fewer than 30% of the votes tallied. Now, it wasn't all the people there. I think about half, a little bit more than half, voted. It seems like a small loss, but this is the biggest movement to unionize at Amazon, garnering interest all the way up to President Biden. But Amazon has gone on an aggressive campaign to squash the efforts, arguing its workers have access to rewarding jobs without needing involving a union. Amazon has 1.3 million people now. It's hired about 500,000 in the past year, and now has the freedom to handle those employees by its own will. What do you think? What do you think? You said this. You said this. This is your correct prediction.
This is a big deal. And what you have is an organization that's the second largest employer and the only organization in the history of the United States to hire 500,000 people, maybe even the world, in just 12 months.
Right.
So arguably it represents, there's always a tension between capital and labor. So Amazon is capital. Labor, there's real issues here. There's a lot of stories coming out of the warehouses, essential workers. This has literally put on stage, you know, the biggest issues around the tension between capital and labor and in between the role that unions play. And by a vote of 2-1 from workers in Bessemer, the crisp answer is they don't play a role. I think this is basically, it's that notion of how did I go bankrupt slowly and then suddenly? We're in the suddenly phase for unions. This is, I think, keep in mind, in almost any vote, you know, you win by a few points. Yep. They got the shit kicked out of them.
They did. Let me just push back on something. I think in other parts of the country, it's going to be different. I think in New York, they're going to start organizing in New York near JFK.
Queens, biggest union town in America.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think it's going to be different everywhere. This is by no means over for
I'm sorry, that's LaGuardia. Queens is JFK. Anyways, sorry.
Anyway.
Go ahead.
This is going to be a long-term effort by the unions in other parts of the country. This is not the most perfect. Like you said, people had been elevated through Amazon through these parts of the country. Other parts of the country are much more union oriented and have more things. So I think it's going to just continue these skirmishes all over the country for Amazon. This is going to be their number one issue besides the marketplace issue that they have. I think that is a significant problem. This is going to be their issue going forward, just like it is for anyone who has.
You know, it was my like eye-opening move. So I have a long, history with unions. I was a 16-year-old box boy and then a box boy my freshman year at UCLA. And the reason I was able to pay for my fraternity bill and my tuition is because a union made sure that a box boy at San Vicente Foods made $8.50 an hour instead of $4. And it was life-changing for me. It meant I could afford to go to UCLA. And by the way, San Vicente Foods did just fine overcharging for food to sell to people in Brentwood. And so I've always had a very strong connection to unions. But at the same time, I remember when I went on the board of the New York Times, I thought, gosh, these have got to be the most pro-union people in the world. And it became apparent in about a hot minute that the shareholders, the board, the controlling family had nothing but contempt for the union. Mm-hmm. Nothing but contempt. And I thought, well, what's wrong here? And the reality is unions have done a terrible job managing their brand among the public.
Yeah,
and
I would agree with that. No
25-year-old who has their shit together comes home and says, Mom, Dad, great news, I'm going to work for the union. They've just managed their brand terribly.
Yeah.
The brand has these terrible associations of corruption, of not upskilling the workers at the same pace. They try and leverage situations to increase their compensation through exogenous situations as opposed to
the
upskilling
corruption.
Their members. So I just look, and the I mom. Almost worry. I worry that unions give us cold comfort. We need antitrust. We need minimum wage.
Unions aren't doing their job. How do unions get organized going forward to appeal to young people where it would work in Bessemer? I'm not so sure it would work in
Bessemer.
Good
luck with that. Good luck with that.
I know, but there's ways to do it. They do it in other parts of the world where unionization is much healthier.
I think that brand has the same resonance with young people as Sears and Blockbuster
okay.
at this point.
All right. But I do still think employee initiatives are not going away for Amazon. They have too many people working
agreed.
For them.
Agreed.
It is a big vulnerability for them and also an asset. And now, they could also lead the lobbying on minimum wage, getting it up to $15. They could lead on all kinds of health benefits. And as you said, instead of tweeting obnoxious things, they could just be a leader in this area.
Okay, but here's the problem.
Take a negative and turn it into a positive for themselves.
I agree. I think they will lip sync to increasing the minimum wage,
yep.
but there are no union dues involved in minimum wage.
Yep.
And so I don't think they're going to be a warrior for minimum wage. And I also think the biggest hit to unions that's happened in the last decade.
I'm talking about Amazon, but go ahead. Yeah.
Is unfairly or fairly. They were seen as trying to exploit the pandemic to increase the compensation of their teachers instead of putting kids first.
That's a broken relationship.
And I think that if you're a parent and you hear from a union that we're not sending our teachers back, who average age, primary school teachers, average age is 33. I mean, they're not exactly a vulnerable group. Mm-hmm. I thought unions really handled that poorly.
Yeah.
Real and it's hard to categorize. It's hard to generalize and stereotype unions because there's just there's several hundred and some are outstanding and some are corrupt. But I literally think this was a seminal moment. I think this was not, I don't want to call it the last nail in the coffin of unions, but this is I think the fat lady is on the stage here for unions.
And I think it's an opportunity for them. It's good to lose. It's good.
They've been losing
badly.
A lot. They've had a lot of good the last 30 years.
I got it. But there's a way to win. There's a way to have a winning argument to workers. Look who's taken workers' rights. It's the Republicans with populism. You know what I mean? Like, there's an opportunity to win back. It was interesting that I don't think Biden lost anything by doing this, saying he's for the workers.
No downside. But why isn't the United States Senate the strongest union in the world representing all workers? That's what I understand.
All right. Anyway. Well, interesting. It's a big win for Amazon. I don't think it's over. Scott does think it's over. So for unions, I don't think it's over by any stretch. I think they'll double down in
areas
they can.
You're kissing the ass of your master's in fine arts book club. I know how smart you are.
No, I'm not. I was in a union. I was in a newspaper union once. I'm not anymore.
I'm still in a union.
Are you?
Yeah, UFW for my classification at Stern.
Oh.
Yeah.
What is the UFW?
No, I'm sorry, the UAW. Yeah. Somehow United Auto Workers ended up representing a certain classification of academics or professors at Stern, and I used to pay dues.
Wow. I think I'm in SAG because I was on Bill Maher once. You might be in SAG. I think they enter you into something where you can join SAG. Because I've been on a bunch of TV stuff, but otherwise I don't believe I'm in any unions. And I have mixed feelings on them, but mostly positive if they're done correctly. All right, Scott. Let's go on a quick break, and we'll be back to talk about Alibaba's first big antitrust fine in China and have a friend of Pivot, best-selling author Walter Isaacson.
Fox Creative.
This is advertiser content from Atlassian.
The universal truth with our customers is they're all struggling to get stuff done. Our goal is, how do we help them unleash the potential of their people, their teams, and their technology to actually get the right things done at the right time with the right people the right way? And when we do that, magical things truly happen.
Dom Price is Atlassian's work futurist. It's his job to help Atlassian customers imagine more effective ways to work.
it's completely natural to focus on what you can control in your team. The problem is if that's all you do, you get pretty myopic. The best teams I'm working with, they really work on who are the people upstream and downstream that we need to work with. How do we get flow across the organization? How do we get value into the hands of our customers quickly?
And sometimes achieving flow means that instead of asking who do I work for, it's asking who do I work with.
When you get team connection right, everyone benefits, the employee, the employer, and the customer, right? To get stuff done, the best organizations and teams right now are focusing on modern work. They're dreaming about the future, but they're dreaming about it by planting the seed to get the right things done right now.
Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom enable teams to work effectively together to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Learn more at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com.
Support for Pivot comes from Pendo. Think about some experiences you've had where your review was nice enough. That restaurant down the street you heard was great, nice enough. That boutique hotel you were so excited to try, oh, nice enough, I guess. Not exactly ringing endorsements. And these days, if your brand's app experience is just nice enough, chances are you won't be keeping your users engaged the way you want to. Pendo improves the apps your customers and employees rely on. Whether you're building applications for customers or managing applications for employees, Pendo can help deliver better experiences for your users so they can get more value from your software. Pendo can also help you get answers to critical questions about how users are engaging with your app, then turn those insights into action, all in one easy-to-use platform. Visit pendo.io/pivot to learn more about how your team can use Pendo to start building better digital experiences. There, you can also check out Pendo's lineup of free certification courses, 12 hours of in-depth training for your product management teams on topics from AI to product analytics to product-led growth. That's pendo.io/pivot to learn more.
We are back. Let's talk about Alibaba's first major antitrust fine in China over the weekend. Chinese regulators hit the Asian e-commerce giant with a $2.8 billion antitrust fine. Its officials said Alibaba had broken the country's anti-monopoly law by preventing merchants from selling their goods on other shopping platforms. To put into context, Alibaba reported profits of more than $12 billion in the last 3 months of 2020 alone. Then the Ant Group, a financial affiliate behind Alibaba, announced a sweeping overhaul of its business in response to demands from Chinese government as part of a rectification plan, which sounds scary in a communist country. The company said it would apply to set up as a financial holding company, which would bring closer supervision and requirements. Ant also said it would change the way it collects and uses personal information to improve data security and prevent abuse. The company says it will improve corporate governance, better adhere to rules about fair competition. Gosh, sounds like things maybe we should do in this country, but China just decided it. I don't know. You know, there's stuff behind the behind-the-scenes stuff here, but interesting moves. What do you think?
Well, we did do this in this country, and that is we fined the FTC fined Facebook $5 billion in July of 19. Mm-hmm. It was the largest in history, and distinct to the fact it was barely, and this is the scale of things now, the previous biggest fine was $22 million. Mm-hmm. So this, you know, this was literally 500 times the size, but it was less than 1% of Facebook's market cap. And the stock went up 3% the day they announced the fine because the market hates. Yeah. Did you see what happened to Alibaba stock today?
Up.
8%.
Yeah, there you go.
So we've been to this movie before. And quite frankly, if I were, and I'm thinking about this, I only like to buy stocks I'm going to own, at least think I'm going to own for 5 years. Yeah. Alibaba is going to, I think similar to Facebook, the year after they cleared up this insecurity, the market hates unknowns. I think this thing is up 20 to 30% by the end of the year. If you look at it right now, it's trading at a multiple of earnings that looks like a meddling internet company in the U.S. It's I think Alibaba, relative to its performance right now, is the cheapest internet stock in the
world. I do think people are nervous about what China could do at any one time. I think that's and more effectively than antitrust people here, or you know how slow we move around these things.
I would argue that that's a bit of a American view. I would argue we're more volatile and have our head way up more, our ass much more, other than being, you know, a communist autocracy. And I'll give you that we have a better system. As it relates to the internet and antitrust, we've got nothing on them. Nothing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Ant is a juggernaut. Alibaba, everybody, we're so, and I'm guilty of this, we're so narcissistic. We think that all innovation takes place within a 7-mile radius of SFO. Alibaba is more innovative than any finance, delivery, grocery, payments.
They are everywhere. E-commerce. All our internet companies together in one.
Cloud. It's just like they kind of dominate. And they're
Jack Ma is a fascinating character.
And if they can manage to put this behind them and Jack Ma doesn't end up behind bars and there's some what I'll call greenfield where they say, okay, we put this behind us. That stock goes to multiple of revenues versus multiple of EBITDA. Mm-hmm. So I'm just very bullish on Alibaba. And we've been to this movie before. Once the quote unquote fine is put behind them, the stock tends to trend up. So this is a big story.
They've come to an understanding, the government and Alibaba,
that's right.
I suspect, including, you know, and it's also just the ownership of these Chinese companies. There's a lot of data leakage going back and forth between the government and the companies, but it's interesting that the Chinese government they're making a statement here by controlling Ma in some way.
Well, the government is supposed to regulate these guys when they get too big. But this was an equivalent, what I'll call slap on the wrist. Their stock's up 8% today.
Yep.
So what is a fine supposed to do? You know, you don't, when you get a parking ticket, you don't come home and celebrate. Or when you get a speeding ticket, you don't come home and go, we just got richer, everybody. I got a parking ticket. But when you find a big tech company, you come home and they're richer, they're wealthier. So I think this is, I think this is really interesting. And Alibaba is a juggernaut. In my view, Alibaba is the best value internet stock in the world. By the way, Charlie Munger made his first public stock purchase in 7 years today or Friday.
Alibaba. Yeah, I would agree. He's quite a character, Jack Ma. Maybe we'll get him to come over to the U.S. and talk to us about things.
I like that.
Yeah, he was wonderful. At Code, he talked so fast. He was so excited about all the various things he had done. And he's really he's a fascinating character.
Can we leak the panel you suggested at the beginning of the call?
No, we haven't asked yet.
Come on.
Let's just say the name of it.
Rub the dog's belly.
We got to ask and find out. Yeah, Scott wants to do a panel at Code, which is coming at the end of September.
Can I give the title of the panel?
Yeah.
Aggrieved White Males.
Yeah.
It's going to be the best.
I'm going to see what I can do.
There's a lot of us out there. You picked two great ones other than me.
Okay.
There's
plenty of those people. All right. Let's bring on a friend of Pivot. Walter Isaacson, someone I've known forever, is the author of a new book called Codebreaker. He's also the best-selling author of so many things, including the book Steve Jobs. And Walter, welcome. I feel like you've got so many things behind your name that I don't know which one to pick, but we've known each other for decades, I guess.
I think friend of Kara is probably the most important, and somebody who,
Charmer.
When I go to the gym, listens to both of you
Charmer.
All the time.
Go on. Oh,
very nice, Walter. So Walter's from the South, so this is his... Yeah. Is a very polite way of saying such nice things about us. Anyway, let's talk about you and this new book. And I do want to get back to sort of where we are with Apple at some point at the end, since you wrote that massive book on Steve Jobs. So tell us about Jennifer Doudna. I did an interview with her also on Sway, but talk about why you chose her as a subject and where does she fit into the other narratives you've written?
You and I grew up in the digital revolution, you know, with the Steve Jobses and the Bill Gates, and it produced amazing things. It brought, you know, microchips into our homes with our personal computers, and iPhones became platforms. And I thought, that's totally transformative. Mm-hmm. But as I'm looking at the beginning of the 21st century, starting with the sequencing of the human genome, and of course, climaxing with gene editing tools, and for that matter, RNA vaccines that we can program, I realize that, you know, molecules are the new microchip, and the first half of this century will truly be a biotech revolution, just like you and I lived through the digital revolution. Mm-hmm. And Jennifer Doudna is this, as you know, because I've heard her on your podcast, but also I've spent the past 4 or 5 years hanging out with her, is a perfect entree into that, because she discovers the structure of RNA just the way Watson and Crick helped discover with Rosalind Franklin that of DNA. And she and her advisor figure out how RNA can replicate and be the source of life on this planet, then how it can be a guide for gene editing tools. And now we're using it as a messenger to create vaccines.
mRNA, messenger RNA.
Messenger RNA to create vaccines. And of course, she's thrown herself into the moral and ethical issues. Yeah. So there's a lot of colorful characters in my book, but like any writer, it's good to have a central character that I can hold their hand and the reader can hold our hands and we go step by step through
and
a journey of discovery.
Right. Scott's gonna have a question, but can you generally explain CRISPR for those who don't know what it is, just very briefly?
Yeah, it's simple. It's just something bacteria have been doing for a billion years. They have clustered repeated sequences known as CRISPRs in their genetic material that takes mugshots of any virus that attacks it. So if the virus attacks again, they cut it up using a guide RNA. And that's pretty useful in this day and age of us getting attacked by viruses. What Jennifer Doudna and Emmanuel Sharp and Jay and others discovered was a way to repurpose this, to recode that guide so it would cut our own DNA at a targeted spot. So we could say, cut out this genetic flaw or cut out this gene or fix this. And so they repurposed the CRISPR system of bacteria to be a gene editing tool for us.
Scott?
So in any exciting technology that hits sort of this parabolic increase or in outcomes, there's externalities. And when you, obviously you really got to know this field, what do you see as the two or three biggest risks we face with this explosion or this, you know, envisioned explosion in biotech, if you will?
I think that first we should say it's going to be a godsend in so many ways. Mm-hmm. People who are blind, who have sickle cell anemia, Huntington's, Tay-Sachs, cancer, all these things are going to fix. Having said that, the two biggest things I worry about are, A, if it's this sort of genetic supermarket isn't free, and it won't be, the rich could buy better genes. And we could exacerbate the inequality we have in our society, not just exacerbate it, but encode it into our species the way in Brave New World
or in Gattaca.
Meaning
they don't get sick or they don't get.
Or they have children that are 6 inches taller than the rest of them. Or they decide, with all due respect to Scott, that I want a full head of blonde hair for my, you know, and I don't, you know. And they edit their own children and they buy better genes for their children. And eventually it could even be things like memory or intelligence or height or muscle mass or eye color or anything. Secondly, I think if we let this just be a free market thing, that it could end up being what I would call a free market's eugenics. Now, eugenics, we think about the Nazis or even Cold Spring Harbor in the early days of the United States 20th century, where the government mandates certain master race things.
Right.
I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about individual choices where people edit out the diversity of our species. Behind me, you can see on your little squadcast thing, you know, these big doors behind me that open to a balcony on Royal Street. I remember walking with your two sons. They were visiting once. Well, and Royal Street is filled with all sorts of characters, short and tall and fat and skinny and Creole colored and black and white and gay and straight and trans and deaf and hearing enabled. And that's what makes our species so cool and so great and creative and resilient.
Right.
And if we allow people to say, I want to edit out anything that's, I call a deviation from typical, that's a bad thing too.
Depending on what typical is. Correct.
But are we?
Right. I use typical because whenever I use normal, people say, well, that's a normative term. So I'm trying to figure out, typical for me on height is, say, whatever I am, you know, tall. 5'7".
Right.
You know, and if somebody's being born at 4'6", you might say, if that's a genetic condition, we should fix it, and they can be typical species height. But if somebody's going to be born like I am at 5'7", then that's an enhancement if you give me another 8 inches.
You wouldn't, correct? That's, it's your genes. This is not to... for existing people, it's your children.
Right. Although even with muscle mass, that can be regulated. We have myostatin. That's a genetically controlled in our body. And in theory, you could, especially in younger children, have greater muscle mass. But height is something you probably, No, I won't go into your Twitter feed, but I know that Scott doesn't need more muscle mass.
Even Walter Isaacson is mocking me.
By the way, Walter,
when I read your stuff, you definitely sound 5'8". Just so you know.
Thank you.
5'7".
Just so you know.
Yeah, you're taller than you look on a podcast. That's a nice thing to say.
Go ahead, Scott.
Well, just around the fears around income inequality, are we already there? Zolgensma is this drug, a knockout drug for muscular atrophy that basically cures an incurable disease, but you need $2.1 million for two doses. And I just got a GoFundMe for it from a couple in Holland trying to raise money for their daughter. And I don't think they're going to make it. And I think the kid's going to die. I mean, aren't we already there?
I'm hearing these things. You know, one of the things is people say, well, we shouldn't use CRISPR. I get 12. I'm not kidding you. I can scroll through my phone here. 12 a day, at least, of people saying, I want to show you the picture of my 4-year-old son.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
Or my 12-year-old granddaughter. And he has this or she has that. Can you get me in touch with Dr. Doudna? Can you help fix it? And as you say, that's heartrending. So that's why I don't want to stop research into this because we can fix genetic diseases. Secondly, Jennifer Doudna has taken the problem that, Scott, you illustrated, which is it can cost $1 million to fix sickle cell in the patient that got cured last year. How do you bring that cost down? There are a couple of ways of doing it. One is that you can do it in the body, so it doesn't mean taking out stem cells, you know. There are ways to make this much cheaper. But the other way to do it is to do it in the sperm or the egg or the early stage embryo, so it's inheritable, and it means that you wipe out sickle cell once and for all for one quick edit, and that's cheaper. But that's a line we have to be careful about crossing, making inheritable edits.
Let me ask you a question, because one of the things, you know, you and I and also Scott has watched sort of the internet sort of morph into something pretty ugly when everyone had this hopefulness around it. And it's that, you know, when you get into gene editing, it's even more like the idea. And there's been a million sci-fi movies. Like there's dozens and dozens where people do this, not just Brave New World, but, you know, so many of it. When I was a kid, there was a young person, there was a play called Twilight of the Gold, if you remember, which was editing out gay. It was terrifying to me as a gay person that you could edit out the child of this couple who's a gene editor. Jennifer talks a lot about the ethics of this because she had the issue with the Chinese doctor who was using the technology to, I think it was clone. Is that correct? What were they doing?
It's an interesting question because what the Chinese doctor did was make inheritable edits in very early stage embryos to eliminate one of the receptors for HIV, the virus that causes AIDS. And there was shock. Everybody was upset. That wasn't really necessary. You shouldn't make inheritable edits. Well, after this year of the, you know, pandemic, the notion of doing edits that might make us less susceptible to viruses, you have to remind me, okay, what was wrong with that? Now, obviously it was wrong because we're not ready. It wasn't safe. He was a sloppy doctor. But if we could safely edit out receptors for certain viruses and know that we didn't have unintended consequences, it'll take a while before we can know all that.
So who gets to decide? That's the thing. I mean, the internet's sort of been run like Wild West, and you see where we are. There's nobody getting to decide any of this stuff, or it's just grown up without decision-making. So who's on the front lines of this? I know she's talked a lot about this, but who gets to pick what's, and because it's a big wide world with lots of people with money, lots of different opinions on humanity. How do you figure that out once this medicine is out into the public?
Well, I think we have to have some social consensus. And by we, I mean you and me and Scott and everybody listening to this. We shouldn't just give it to the politicians or the scientists and say, you figure it out. And that's why I wrote this book, because the science isn't all that hard, but the moral issues are, and we should all have a right to chip in, whether you're in the disabled community or differently abled community, or you have a child with genetic disease, or you don't want us messing with Mother Nature. We should all talk about this. The biggest issue, and I deal with it in the book, it's somewhat complex, but y'all have talked about this on your podcast before, is to what extent it should be regulated by government and society as a whole, and to what extent should it be individual choice.
Right.
And on a lot of reproductive decisions, of course, we like leaving it to individual choice. That's what we do in a free market system. But if you left everything about gene editing to individual choice, you would have this problem of editing out the diversity. You would have this problem of the rich buying better genes. And so maybe it's like vaccine distribution. Some people will buy their way to the head of the queue, but not many people actually did, because we had a social consensus of here's how we're going to distribute this new vaccine. And I think we need to develop that with CRISPR as well.
But who? Like.
Yeah, I think it'll, I mean, we already have two groups working on it. Jennifer has gathered all what I call the national academies, which is the Chinese Academy. There's a character in my book named Dongqing Pei, who's been working on it. And they've put the doctor who did that early stage embryo editing into jail because they decided it was a violation. Mm-hmm. The Royal Academy in Britain, Europe, the United States, National Academy of Sciences, and Jennifer and David Baltimore and other people you know, Peggy Hamburg, a part of that process. The WHO is doing a parallel process, and we do have to try to get, but it's like basically the regulatory agencies. It's not that hard, like the FDA. You know, people can get off-label drugs or do treatments the FDA hasn't approved, but not much. I mean, most people don't, and if we get a consensus of the FDAs around the world, we can keep this genie or this gene in the bottle to some extent.
This is a different kind of genie, Scott.
Yeah, my question is more, I'm interested to get into the head of Walter Isaacson. I read Andrew Roberts' biography of Churchill, and I had the same feeling when I finished that book than when I finished one of your books, and that is, you know these people. and more than anyone maybe who's alive today, you know better the most successful people or the most impactful people in the history of our society. And so my question to you would be, of all of these people that you know really well, a few questions. One, who in your view was the most self-actualized or led the most rewarding life, just personally? Who was the most tortured? And then my third, and I'll repeat them again if you need, is if you decided, and I'm not saying this is the right decision, but if you decided you wanted to raise young men and young women that might have a chance to have that kind of impact on the world, do you see any commonalities in terms of how they were raised or their upbringing? So let's start with happiest, most tortured, and then any insights as a parent.
Well, when it comes to most happy and driven, you also get the most tortured, because he's one of the great people with, it contains multitudes, and that was Steve Jobs. I mean, he really was self-actualized. He really invented himself, had, as Kara and I have talked about many times, a reality distortion field that sometimes worked. But he was also had a lot of demons that caused him to be a pretty rough character. Jennifer is a much more happy person, but she too has insecurities that come from being a young woman told girls don't do science, and being an outsider in Hilo, Hawaii, where everybody else was Polynesian. So I think most of the people in my books have some extent been outsiders, especially, you know, Leonardo being born out of wedlock, gay, left-handed, and having to go to Florence, where he gets accepted, but he keeps asking, how do we fit in? And Jennifer's always asking, how do I fit in? And Steve Jobs always asking, as an adopted child in this weird environment, how do I fit into the cosmos? The other thing that they share is this amazing curiosity that's a basic curiosity. I call it the tongue of the woodpecker, because Leonardo wrote one day in the margin
of his
notebook.
He wrote in the margin of his notebook, and the 10 things he wanted to know that day described the tongue of the woodpecker. Now, how do you do? I mean, you have to get a woodpecker, open his mouth. I mean, who? But he was just basic curiosity on that. And he writes, why is the sky blue? And I realized Einstein had that in his notebook. Jennifer thought about that as a child. I'm looking outside these windows. I see a blue sky. I've outgrown my wonder years. I quit asking so many stupid questions, as grown-ups would tell me, don't ask them. But they all refrain from outgrowing their wonder years. And they not only have a passionate curiosity about basic things like blue skies, why water swirls when it passes a rock, they also have a curiosity about all aspects of nature. They're able to see patterns that ripple across nature. Hmm. As you know, as Steve Jobs, he loved calligraphy and dance and music and theater when he's at Reed College, but also coding. And he's the one who, and Kara has been to so many of those, when he launched a product, the last slide was always that intersection of two streets, the liberal arts and technology.
It was.
Well, Leonardo's Vitruvian Man is that exact same intersection. He's standing there naked, self-portrait in the science and the humanities of our cosmos. So people who see patterns across nature because of their curiosity tend to be the most creative.
Oh, that's great. That's a fantastic answer. I'm going to ask one more question about Jennifer herself. When you're thinking about of a character like Jennifer Doudna, who won the Nobel Prize this year, my funniest encounter was her. She said, "I didn't get to have a ceremony." And then I said, "Well, you get one next year." And she goes, "No, we don't. We don't get any, you know, go to Sweden and do the whole mall thing." But one of the things is, what is she focused in on now? Is it pandemic stuff? Because we talked a little bit about it. So how, looking out at what's happened over the last year, we've been taken down, digital and advanced as we are, we're editing genes, this and that. We've been taken down by a virus, essentially, just like that, because we're so physical. But what is her outlook on that?
All right. Almost exactly a year ago, early March of last year, she sent her son, Andy, to Fresno by train to be in one of Dean Kamen's, you know him, first robotics, robot building competition. And at 2 a.m., Jennifer wakes up, nudges her husband, Jamie, and says, "We got to go pick up Andy, you know, because this pandemic seems to be spreading. They're closing the book." So Andy's an only child. So when they arrive, you can imagine he's not happy. But they convince him to come along. And just as they're leaving the parking lot, they get a text saying robot competition canceled. And so Jennifer, when she gets back to Berkeley at about 7 a.m., summons scientists, 50 of them, to meeting as partly in person, partly by Zoom, to say, how are we going to pivot and repurpose what we're doing to fight the coronavirus? So for the past year, she's been using CRISPR to make home detection kits, which you'll get in a few months. They'll be, they've been emergency authorized, but it's not yet manufactured, where you can just, like a pregnancy test, have saliva, put it in the machine. Do I have COVID? Do I have my kid have strep throat? Is that tumor resurfacing? People, it'll be like Steve Jobs' iPhone. It'll be a platform that people will build their own apps on.
So many platforms off of this pandemic.
Yeah, and the platform will be to say, I can use this machine to study your gut microbiome to see if you're eating the wrong yogurt or something. So this will bring biology into our homes the way the first personal computers in the 1970s brought microchips into our home. And so she's working on these home detection tools. She's working on a very advanced way of looking at just using CRISPR to kill viruses rather than stimulate our immune system. And she's working on testing technologies. She's also doing what Scott asked about, which is, all right, we've used CRISPR to cure sickle cell. It costs more than $1 million. How do we get it down to at least, you know, $10,000, where maybe insurance companies and Medicare can and Medicaid can afford it?
Scott, last question.
So you have, you're limited to one more person you can do a biography on.
Who would it be? Good one.
Well, I'm going to have to consult with you all. I actually, you know, if I don't go back in the Wayback Machine, there are three or four people around today that have that curiosity across disciplines. Obviously, Bezos is very interesting. Elon Musk is interesting, but perhaps we're still in the middle of the story. I want to see how we're old enough to know, you know, how this movie ends. What's the next reel of this movie? I am deeply fascinated by Bill Gates, and he's somebody I admire, and in some ways has been a subject of controversies that are unfair. But he has that interest across so many different fields. He bought Leonardo's scientific notebook, which is the Codex Lester, because, you know, he understands the beauty of Leonardo being interested in things. So with Bill Gates, whether it's climate change or vaccines, but also creating personal computers, being one of the people who did it, but now doing nuclear energy, it gives me a chance to look at many different things. I haven't decided yet, and I've probably gone too far.
I got another one, Dolly Parton.
You know what? It's a joke, but
it's
man,
not a joke. It's
I'm
not a
playing
joke.
Her songs
singer,
now.
Songwriter, donate. Fascinating.
We missed
person.
Mardi Gras here because it was closed down. Yeah. So instead of having floats, people decorated their homes as floats, and people drove by them. And my favorite on St. Charles Avenue was a shrine home float to Dolly Parton.
Send me photos.
With all of her music and a big, big picture of her and the vaccine she had helped to fund.
Dolly Parton.
You know, it shows that the human species, even in times of a pandemic crisis, can rise to this challenge.
I find Dolly Parton riveting as a creator and, you know the best-selling songs
of all
time.
I'm sure she feels the same of you.
No, I doubt it. I don't know if she knows who I am, but best-selling songs of all time. People don't realize. Writing.
Really?
Yes.
Like?
I Will Always Love You.
Yeah.
Well, that's why she's so rich, to be able to give all that money to Moderna. Scott, any last questions? You don't know. Which one of those? What do you think of those three?
Are you asking me?
Yeah. Which of those three you mentioned? Not Dolly Parton. Which one?
Hands down, Bill Gates. Hands down.
All right, Scott.
Hands down.
That means that if I do this, you will have me back.
Okay.
He is so good, isn't he? He is
and
such
I
a charmer.
And I will put you in the acknowledgement.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's such a charmer. Okay, all right. Yeah.
I truly agree with you. I just think you can get into anything.
Climate change. Yeah, you got it. Yeah, yep,
you
yep,
get
yeah.
into anything
yeah,
through
Musk
him.
Yeah, Musk isn't over. We could be in for the Howard Hughes portion of this. You know, Howard Hughes was this brilliant. Howard Hughes.
No, I'm not going to do Howard Hughes. I'd rather do Dolly Parton.
There's one moment.
And definitely Bill Gates.
All
I'm
right,
glad
okay.
we've reached that consensus.
100%.
Eventually, Musk will be the
100%.
One.
But don't tell anybody
all right,
because
I have to make sure I tell my
secret is safe with us.
Secret is safe.
Good.
All right, Walter, thank you so much. We will be down in New Orleans as soon as we can.
Nolan, love it.
What?
Love it.
All right. Thanks, Walter. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, Scott, one more quick break. That was so amazing. We'll be back for wins and fails.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Okay, Scott, wins and fails, and try to be as intelligent as Walter Isaacson if you can.
That would be impossible. And plus, that guy is so charming, isn't
he's charming?
He's a charmer. Gosh, mm-hmm. Charming guy.
They were saying he was going to run for Louisiana mayor of New Orleans, but he didn't.
That's got to be an awful job. He's way too smart for that.
Anyway,
way too smart.
Yes.
So my win is there's a consortium of CEOs getting together under with direction or shepherding from Jeffrey Sonnenfeld, who I think is becoming the most influential academic in the world.
Agreed.
To talk about actions they can take or to at least maintain in the news cycle these ridiculous voter suppression laws in Georgia. And I think it's really everyone talks about companies shouldn't be politicized, but I think these are Ken Frazier and Ken Chenal who reek of integrity, have a vested interest, and have decided they want to use their blessings and their hard work and their success to ensure that the people behind them have an easier time than they did getting to the top of corporate, you know, corporate America. And I think it's a really it's just a wonderful thing. It's a win. These guys, mm-hmm. it represents risk for them. It represents damage to shareholder value in some ways. Mm-hmm. It would be easier for them just to not do this stuff. It's not easy to coordinate a bunch of CEOs and get on the same page as everything.
Yeah.
And Georgia has managed to unify competitors and get them on a call.
I'm fascinated the Republican Party is giving up. This group of people is going to do what they want to, and they are not going to list. The Mitch McConnell statement about don't get into politics, like, screw you, Mitch. Like, in terms of that, I think you're right. All right. What's your fail?
There's something around the brain, I think, once it hits 50. I don't know about you. I think I understand cryptocurrencies better than 99% of the mm-hmm. public, and I don't understand cryptocurrencies. Mm,
that's about right.
And I think that basically bank CEOs have so badly missed crypto, and Coinbase is supposed to go public on Wednesday. I think it's a direct listing.
We'll talk about that Thursday, I think.
It's a direct listing, which means they try and pair the demand by coming out at a first mm-hmm. trade that better calibrates the actual demand. Regardless, I think this stock goes up. I think it's a monster. And I think a decent question in the boardrooms of Credit Suisse or UBS or JP Morgan or BAML or Goldman mm-hmm. Sachs is, how the fuck did we let Coinbase happen? I mean, yep. Coinbase is basically an exchange and a trading desk of
indeed.
A financial asset that on the day of the IPO is going to be worth more than Goldman Sachs.
Yep.
And these banks, granted,
they poo-pooed it. I was around, remember?
Yeah, because they don't understand it.
Years ago, I kept saying,
I did the same thing. I'm like, it's going to zero, which is loud for me saying, I don't want to put in the time to understand it.
Yep, I agree. I'm glad you've come to that conclusion.
As an aggrieved white male.
But
anyways, my loss is, I think the bank CEOs and boards have to ask themselves some questions that this is now a $2 trillion asset class. And people want to trade in it. And now we have Stripe, PayPal, and Coinbase.
There will be transactions in it. There will be transactions.
Are all worth more than the traditional banks. Yeah. And so if you're on the board of one of these companies, you're like, okay, you know, what the actual fuck? Isn't this the business we're in?
Do you know what? Aggrieved person, I agree with you on that. I'm going to do two quick wins and fails.
Good.
Wins, I think the prosecution in the... in the trial, in the Derek Chauvin trial, is what it is.
Yeah.
I think he's doing a great job. Great job. They could just have not done as good a job. I think they're doing an excellent job making sure it will be very hard for this jury not to convict. I know this has been a history. Mm-hmm. I know this could happen again and again, and it keeps happening again where cops get off for egregious behavior. But I've been watching a lot of it, and I'm very impressed.
Well, the blue wall has been breached here. Cops generally have a fraternal order of not speaking ill of each other, and they've all said what happened here was...
The prosecution's very sharp. I've been watching them, and I don't do... And
not
the
as
other
good
one.
As Marcia Clark. Remember her?
Oh, God.
I love that they got bonuses, and then someone said, other than letting a murderer off scot-free, what did you decide they should get bonuses for?
Yeah. That was a case.
Then she went on like Inside Hollywood or something. I'm like, oh, gosh.
That's my win.
I'm sorry.
And alternately, the fail is this thing this weekend that got so much play, the
What's
viral
that?
Video of the officer shooting the... pepper spraying the black army officer who was in the car. He was trying to get out safely of the car. And this officer just escalated beyond belief what could have been a very simple stop. It shouldn't have been a stop in the first place. It was a new car. But the video itself was so astonishing, the kind of behavior, the aggressive behavior by the cop that was, it cannot be explained away by you don't understand what it's like. It was really eye-opening. This officer's been fired. Virginia's looking into it. But I thought this guy, this lieutenant, handled himself in a very, what would have been a dangerous situation for him, beautifully, and really was calm, cool, mm-hmm. trying his hardest to de-escalate. And the cop was just problematic on every level. Thank you.
There you go.
There you go. So two cop things. So we have a lot to come. There's a lot going on this week. There's going to be a lot about the pandemic. I just did a great interview with Dr. Michelle Williams, who runs Harvard's Chan School. And we're going to talk a little bit about opening the country up, because the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell says the U.S. Mm-hmm. economy is about to start growing much more quickly. But he also said that he's worried, and the outlook has brightened substantially, but at the same time, he warned against reopening the economy too soon amid a new spike in cases. So maybe we'll talk about that on Thursday, mm-hmm. how we're going to open. As you know, I don't know if you read my Twitter feed, but I had my first giant lesbian outdoor dinner party, and we were all so excited to see each other again. Thank you.
Yeah, that sounded, you called it saucy.
It was saucy. Yeah. We hadn't seen each other in like a year. It was great. We were all vaccinated and we still did it outside, but it was.
I feel triggered. I don't like to identify social events by their sexuality.
Well, it was
their sexual
lesbians.
Orientation.
Okay, fine.
I think that's...
And you want to do a panel called Aggrieved White Men. Okay, great. Okay, Scott.
I'm not aggrieved white heterosexual man.
Okay. And in fact, that's who it is. Indeed.
Which is all redundant. That
exactly.
is all redundant.
All right, Scott, that's the show. We'll be back Friday for more.
We will.
Go to nymag.com/pivot to submit your question to the Pivot Podcast. The link is also in the show notes. And please read Scott's excellent cover story.
That's right.
The New York Magazine.
Nick Nolte.
Volatility.
Nick Nolte, sexiest man alive, 1997.
Volatility, Scott, read us out.
Today's show was produced by Rebecca Sinanis. Ernie Intertot engineered this episode. Thanks also to Hannah Rosen and Drew Burrows. Make sure you subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, or if you're an Android user, check us out on Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. If you liked our show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Pivot from New York Magazine and Vox Media, the home of Preet Bharara. You know, we should have him on. We should have him on with Brett Favre. Brett Favre and Preet Bharara. I don't even know how to say that. By the way, he and I come back, check out the friendship that is going to develop between the dog and Preet. Check
first
it out.
You need to learn how to pronounce his name.
We'll see you Friday. Have a great week, Carol.
Support for the show comes from Atlassian. What do you think of when you hear the word flow? How about a smooth river of collaboration culminating in a shared ocean of positive outcomes across your organization? Atlassian software like Loom, Confluence, and Jira can help you achieve maximum flow across your teams by enabling fast and easy communication and connection no matter what time zone they're in. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unlock flow across your teams at Atlassian.com. That's ATLASSIAN.com. Atlassian.